It's 30 years on now, and though nobody lives in the crumbling apartment buildings in Pripyat, thousands continue to work at the wrecked plant to maintain its safety. And since the disaster, plenty of research is being carried out on the continuing effects of the catastrophe. Among those researchers is James Smith, professor of environmental science at Portsmouth University in the UK.
I first went there in 1994, and at the time we were studying the transfer of radioactivity in aquatic ecosystems, so in lakes and rivers around the zone and around the power station. And we were looking at how the radioactivity got into the rivers and lakes, how long it was going to be there, and how it got taken up by the aquatic food chains.
So how much in the way of contamination did you find in those early years?
So in the first few weeks and months after the accident, the radioactivity in the rivers and lakes went down very quickly, because a lot of the radionuclides, a lot of them decayed very quickly out of the environment. But radiocesium, which is the one that we're all worried about at the moment, because it has a 30-year half-life, it's around in the environment for a long time, that accumulates in the aquatic food chain. So broadly, what we found after Chernobyl was what people had seen after the nuclear weapons testing was this high bioaccumulation of radioactive cesium, not just in fish, but in many foodstuffs.
And what else did you look at in terms of organisms?
We've looked at aquatic insects. So we did a study together with some biologist colleagues of mine to look at the communities of what we call invertebrates, so little insects that live in the sediments of these lakes. How are they faring after the big radioactive release?
So I have to ask you, are the bugs being bugged?
Apparently not. We'd studied 8 lakes of different levels of contamination. So some of them near natural background radiation levels, and up to a lake called Gluboki, which is the most contaminated lake we studied at Chernobyl. And we didn't find any difference in the aquatic insects in the different lakes. And in fact, Gluboki, it wasn't statistically significant, but it did have the highest diversity and abundance of aquatic insects.
Interesting. Now, you continue to go back. How aware have you been of radiation levels dropping, and how does that affect the health of the wildlife, do you think?
Well, we've also looked at mammals in the exclusion zone. So the exclusion zone, it's about 4,000 square kilometers of land, and roughly half of it's in Ukraine and half of it's in Belarus to the north of Ukraine. And we worked with our Belarusian colleagues who study their sector of the zone, so they're half of the exclusion zone. And we found in a paper we did last year that the mammal communities are doing very well. The Belarusians had used helicopters to survey the zone for wild boar, I think you call them hogs in the States, roe deer and elk. And what they found was an increasing population from about 1 to 2 years after the accident up to 10 years after the accident.
It seems that the wildlife is doing okay. How safe would it be for people to move back there?
Most levels of radiation, even if they're very high at Chernobyl at the moment, it's quite a small risk, but it's a risk that often humans don't choose to take. The exclusion zone is uninhabited because we consider that a risk of, say, 1 in 1,000 risk of getting cancer in later life to a human is not a risk that it's fair for a person to have. So that's why the exclusion zone's uninhabited. But for a mammal population, so for a population of wolves or wild boar, this relatively small risk doesn't affect the population. Although in rare occasions, it might affect an individual.
I have to ask you, when you go there, what do you wear in terms of dosimeters? Something on your body to tell how much radiation you've got?
Yeah, we always wear a dosimeter. Usually we go for about 2 weeks and we go to various spots. So we're not in the hot spots all the time. And I get a dose of about 0.1 or 0.2 millisieverts. And that probably doesn't mean very much to most people.
No, it doesn't. Tell me, what does it mean?
So in the UK, we get about 2.7 millisieverts every year from natural radiation and from X-ray diagnostics. So it's about 20 times lower than I'm getting anyway in the UK. So the radiation dose is now in the exclusion zone. There are some real hot spots which you have to be very careful of, but they're quite small, and most of the zone, you can go on a 2-week visit and you don't get too big a radiation dose.
So, of course, you don't research on humans directly. Your perspective on the effects of human health in this accident?
People are always understandably interested in what the human consequences have been, but statistically, it's going to be very difficult to see that. because we can't distinguish between a cancer that's come from radiation and a cancer that's come from other causes. And so, unfortunately, in developed countries, between about a quarter and a third of people die of cancer. It's very difficult to see this small increase of risk of cancer from Chernobyl in amongst those other natural cancers, if you like. So I think statistically, we'll probably never know how many people have died from Chernobyl, but the estimates have been in the, say, 8,000 people.
Now, there was quite a flap about the question of thyroid cancer. Of course, it was just something that affects young people as well. So that type of cancer, to what extent do you see that among animals?
Don't think there have been any studies of that. I don't think anybody's really looked at that. It's clear, as you say, there's been a big increase in thyroid cancer, particularly in Belarus, since the accident. So there have been several thousand cases since the accident. And that was primarily due to the fact that the Soviet Union then didn't take enough precautionary measures to stop people eating contaminated milk, contaminated produce after the accident. Unfortunately, thyroid cancer is one of the more treatable of cancers, but it's still a serious disease.
Now, I know this isn't your particular area of expertise, but there appear to be different suggestions as to the area's future. Some are suggesting to use it to store high-level waste, or others say, hey, it should just continue as a nature reserve. Where does that debate stand from your understanding?
I think we're getting conflicting views from various people in Ukraine on this. I think a few weeks ago, the Ukrainian government declared the zone as a nature reserve, which it kind of has been, because the animals have been protected by the fact that there aren't people there. But also there's discussion about using it as a waste storage site. I mean, I'm not a geologist, so I can't comment on the geological suitability of the site. But from a human perspective, it makes a lot of sense to me, because people, quite understandably, don't like waste, nuclear waste sites next to their houses. As it is, I don't think people will go and live there again. People, understandably, don't particularly want too many people. So I think the exclusion zone will remain pretty much as it is, as a kind of strange wildlife reserve.
As far as you've seen, it seems that nature's pretty resilient. How fair is that observation?
I think that's true. I mean, you could say that radiation's not perhaps as bad as we think. I've been studying radiation for 25 years and thinking and talking to people about it and thinking about how we perceive it. And it's something that we're naturally frightened of, quite understandably, because we tend to associate it with the horrible nuclear bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, very awful events like Chernobyl and the Fukushima accident. We can't see it, we can't smell it. It kind of has all the elements of things that make us afraid, and I think perhaps we're more afraid than we should be. Yes, it's dangerous, but it's perhaps not as dangerous as we think it is.
Jim Smith is a professor of environmental science at Portsmouth University in the UK. Thanks so much, Jim, for taking the time.
Okay, pleasure.